You're listening to the Brave Parent Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Maples. I'm here for all parents who deeply love their children and want their health span to equal their lifespan. In other words, to be healthy their entire lives. If that's you, tune in. In every episode, we're grappling with contemporary issues that affect every child every day in areas that your doctors either don't know or don't have time to tell you. It's your time to be brave. Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Susan Maples. I'm here for a podcast for Brave Parents. And I'm here with my very good friend and book coach, Lauren Eckert. Hi, Lauren.
Hi.
So we're going to tackle a chapter called Feel and Think, but we've decided to separate it into two chapters. There's so much here. And this was a favorite chapter of mine, maybe not the favorite, but one of the favorite chapters of mine to write, because my mom was a psychologist. She was a relationship therapist. And so growing up with a mom who was earning a master's and a PhD in practicing psychology, it was her whole world. And so having lost my mom just a handful of years ago, writing this chapter felt like a bit of a tribute to her. And I sort of started out saying, you know, I'm an armchair psychologist. I'm not a real psychologist because I know the difference. But I do think that over 36, almost 37 years of sitting chairside with patients and being at 9 funerals for overdose and watching suicides and seeing kids slip into depression and drug addiction and prostitution and various things. And I practice in a health practice. So I'm not really in a low demographic or anything like that. I'm in a very middle class area, but I see what a slippery slope it can be. And I notice that kids that really get into trouble with mental illness and emotional illness and challenges with cognitive health, we saw signs of this early on. And we stay in our lane. We stay in our lane. And my practice has been one to not stay in our lane because we feel like we, instead of being healthcare providers, we're partners with parents to come alongside them and have some brave conversations about what we're witnessing and what we're noticing. And that's meant that we've had to build resources in our community to help kids get help, which is another really difficult area in healthcare, is that we just don't have enough resources for all the things we're going to talk about today. But we're going to start out talking about emotions and talking about just some tough areas that we see with kids from, well, you made a list, Lauren. What is it? You know, name some of the things that we wanted to cover in 20 minutes.
Sure. Bullying, anxiety, comparison, the comparison game, which is very easy to do with social media these days. We'll also talk about those healing apologies, having more structure for our kids, and then kind of that risk too of creating addiction by, you know, different things that we're showing them on what it's like to be an adult and how to survive our days, right? Instead of actually be in the moment of each of our days.
It's tough. I think that, you know, kids don't come with a manual. And even if they did, our own personal flaws would get in the way of parenting by the manual. So we sometimes learn about our own flaws through the lens of parenting our kids. And when you talk about comparison, Lauren, before there was social media, there was comparison. It's part of the human nature.
Yeah.
It's, you know, what we used to say as kids, like, you know, keep up with the Joneses or, you know, try to, it's the constant comparison to others that lowers our self-esteem and makes us feel like we don't have enough worth. We're not worthy enough. And I think if there's anyone who's tackled this subject better than anyone else in today's world is Brené Brown. Than perfection with, you know, she's an amazing emotions researcher who's done a lot with this. And I've really dug into her work, but this comparison issue has definitely heightened with social media, as well as bullying has really been at the forefront of our, you know, a problematic behavior with social media. I mean, social media has some wonderful benefits, but oh my goodness, it can just destroy a child, and they can be very secret about it.
Yes. And that's the part that terrifies me. You know, it's funny, actually on social media, I had some old classmates of mine from junior high post some throwback pictures of back in the day. And I was laughing because we all had like starter jackets. Do you remember those starter jackets? I think they still exist, I'm sure. But you know, that was the thing back then in junior high. Like you had to have a starter jacket to be considered cool. It was the type of jeans you would wear, maybe the types of shoes you would wear. Like it was all like, how's your hair? How's your clothes? It was like so many of those factors that determined your popularity, more like almost tangible things that you could easily, you know, swap out, right? And make it something. And I feel like it's a different level of comparison now with social media, because yeah, some of it might be clothes related or anything else, but now it's all, you know, the quantitative likes, right? Like how many likes are you getting? And that's a harder aspect to control. And you almost feel like you truly have to step into mimicking what someone else is doing to get the same sort of likes or the same sort of thing. So it's like a different level of comparison, things that we never had to think about back in the day.
I think what's coming up for me as we're talking about this is whether or not, you know, at what age do you start to introduce this and how do you keep it for your kids? I notice more and more families have been homeschooling, especially since COVID.
Yep.
And you know, homeschooling kind of eliminates some of that because you're really with your family. I think there's some, you know, you're not learning to socialize as well with other people unless you have church groups or other people you're sort of meeting.
Yeah.
But it does take away some of that. I think one of the things that I'm sensing is just not enough connection to outdoors. And we talked about this with microbial health, not enough connection to outdoors, period. But that can be so soothing. The fact that we can connect to the earth as part of the earth with other animals, you know, be part of the structure rather than in this world, the micro social media world that is blowing up a small faction of that, which is very odd. It's a very odd look at humanity when we're just putting up our best. We're literally on a campaign to take someone out.
Yeah.
And it can be very cruel and very hurtful. So I don't know. I think we're going to see, if you saw, what was the social network one where what was the movie? The Social Dilemma. Where we saw the guys who, you know, who created these social media networks now don't allow their kids to play on them. They're basically sounding the alarms on their own constructs. And it is terrifying to see that. I mean, if you got to see that, I would.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. Highly recommend. It's also terrifying though. Yeah, I mean, for that.
Yeah.
For that same exact reason. But you also think about, you know, what picture is actually painting of reality, right? When you're in reality and you're seeing people versus on something like social media where everything's filter based, no one's quite who they seem. Have you seen those like Instagram posts lately or reels where it's like people will show their filter and like, this is what I look like when I use this filter, and then they'll remove the filter and they look like a totally different person. And
this is adults mostly, adults, but it's great seeing it too.
Kids have access to them. So it's
we really ought to be able to, you know, it brings me to the point of we really ought to know what apps are on our kids' phones, and we ought to know how to troubleshoot them, because there's so many things that kids shouldn't be exposed to, like filters.
Yes, exactly. Like you shouldn't be trying to not look like who you actually are, you know, and especially as you're going through certain years and you have the acne and everything else, right? Like a filter just seems appealing because suddenly you don't have to be who you really are when you look in the mirror. And that's not okay. It's not okay because
then you're going to be sitting here on Zoom. I don't have a filter on. I have to say, I notice that kids who have a strong self-esteem were not handed that. kids who have thicker skin and who can handle that and still feel good about themselves. Mm. We're not handed that. They weren't constantly told that they're better than everyone, that they're awesome. You know, they earned it in a way. They had expectations. They had structure. Mm-hmm. They were able to achieve some hard things with help from parents and others that they could feel good about. They didn't have everything done for them. That's just a generalization, but that's what I noticed. And I think those early years of building that sense of structure and accomplishment within structure, within expectations, is a bedrock, and you can't go back and redo those early years. You know, if by the time they're in fourth and fifth grade and they're coming home in tears every day, demoralized, I mean, it's hard enough to be a kid at that age, let alone not having a sense of, well, you know, you might say that about me, but you can't shoot a bow and arrow the way I do, or you can't, you know, I know that I'm really good at identifying saltwater fish, you know, like whatever it is, yeah. Things kids have been able to do inside their home where they feel accomplished.
Yes. And that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, you mentioned the structure and creating all of that. What do you feel like that looks like? Like, what should parents put into practice, and at what age does that really start with?
Well, I'll give you an example from today. We had a dad in for a new patient exam. He had his child in there. The child was sucking on a pacifier the entire time, even though we had given him a Mile Munchie to break the habit and talk to the parents, because this child already has obstructive sleep apnea and is not able to eat real food. He's just eating out of pouches, and he's 2.5 years old and not chewing. And, you know, so we really worked hard with the family. And when the dad pulled out these things of puffs, which apparently are some sort of gluten-free powder and sugar that dissolve in your mouth, it's like, you know, he doesn't have to chew it. And the dad's like, well, this is all that we can, you know, it's like, okay, the expectations are, the resolve is lost. So part of it is, and then they weren't correcting his behavior as he's slamming his apple juice. Now, you know, I'm like inside just going, oh my goodness. I would like to take your child home with me for a month. And I promise to treat him well and return him. I'm not kidnapping him, but I want to take him home and
retrain him.
That he's going to, you know, changing habits. He's only 2.5, you know, and it's incredible how we lose our resolve to be able to say, look, we assert our expectations and we expect you to do it. And I'm not talking about being hard-nosed, prescriptive, and certainly not physically punitive ever. I'm talking about just holding their feet to the fire and saying, that's not acceptable behavior. And this is acceptable behavior. And what I'd really like you to do is say that again. For instance, with my son, you know, whenever he would get into whining, you know how they whine?
Yeah, I have a 4-year-old who's terrible. So
I would say, honey, these are little filters. Whining words don't get past these fingers.
Love that.
I need you to use the tone of voice I'm using now. And I remember distinctly Hunter saying, I tried to, Mom. I start out like this. And by the end, it just sounds like this. Oh. You can't laugh. You got to not laugh at that, right? And I will just say, take some breaths. I want you to practice breathing really deep. Take a nice deep breath, hold it at the top and release it. Let's do that a couple of times. And then I want you to start over and tell me what you're feeling. We teach our kids calm level communication. That's what I mean by an expectation. But that means I don't get to do it either. I don't get to, I told you to pick up your own. It's like, okay. Or when I do it, to apologize, like, I need a timeout. I need a breath. That came out like whining. I'm not expecting you to hear that in the same way as if I talked to you rationally. 100%. Right.
I love that. My 4-year-old right now, he's going through the whole, like, and he struggles with speech as well. You know, he's seeing a speech therapist. So it's that combination. He gets really frustrated when he can't find the right words, and then he shuts down. And that happened the other day while we were eating breakfast, and then he started kicking me as like a result, because he was frustrated. He was just so frustrated. And I kept telling him to stop kicking me, right? Like nothing's going to, the good is going to come out of it. And, you know, it was in that moment though, where, you know, you feel attacked, right? Because you're getting physically hit over and over.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And it is, it's that like, you have to regulate your emotions and you can't suddenly like react, even though you're escalate. A little attacked. Right.
It's really good practice, Lauren, because when they get to be teenagers and they're smart and their amygdala is taking over and they're all emotions, it's very hard for them not to push your buttons.
I don't look forward to that.
Well, enjoy it. This yes. is practice for us too. You know, we're growing up. As parents, yes. we're growing in our ability to be good communicators. And yes. we, you know, if we don't have the language of emotion, our emotions language is very limited in our culture. Mm-hmm. We either say I'm mad, I'm sad, or I'm happy. Those are like the three things, right? And instead of like a whole plethora of emotions. And if we can use our words better, then we have less a tendency to act out. And that's well-researched. We have to really figure out how to speak impeccably.
Yes.
In other words, respect that our words matter and that we ask, stay more curious with them to dig a little deeper and have them reach for some words that aren't necessarily, you know, when they act mad, it's like, let's talk about what's going on.
That's the one thing that I will probably tell them, you know, once or twice a day, just depending on what we're encountering, but it's always going back to your words are the most powerful tool you have. Use your words. And it's that ownership too, that, you know, even as you were saying, like, I'm mad and all of that, like, I think it's still so important to separate themselves from like that identity, right, with being mad, but it's truly like, just like you have thoughts and you can actually control those thoughts, you do have that control over your emotions as well.
Totally. I was just thinking, well, here you are. You're such a book person and a writer. And you, of course, words matter a lot to you.
Yes.
But, you know, even if you're a novice at this, I mean, Lauren, you have an expansive vocabulary. But I just finished reading Brené Brown's new book called Anatomy of the Heart.
Atlas
of the Heart, where she literally atlases all of the emotions. And basically, that would be an interesting project as a family, to take one word a week or one word a day or however you want to do it and say, what does the word perturbed mean? What does the word anxious mean? What does the word jealous mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And just sort of describe it. And when we're not jealous, when we're not anxious, to talk about the word as we look in would be interesting, right?
I love that. Like, all right, next week we're starting word of the week.
Yeah, it's good, right?
Yeah, I think that's fabulous.
The more we can, go ahead.
And it empowers them to use those right words, right? And actually be able to express what is going on when everything just feels chaotic. We have a really good book called The Color Monster. And it's, do you know it then? So for those who don't, it's about, you know, a little girl helping a monster sort through all of his emotions, and they're all jumbled up in all of these different colors in a jar. And she talks about the importance of pulling one color out at a time and discussing what that color is and how they're feeling. And, you know, by the end, he's feeling love. And it's such a great book to really break down those emotions and what they mean when it does feel like they're all jumbled up sometimes.
I love it. And, you know, so much of this, so much of our negative behaviors are fear-based, right? For all of us.
Yes.
And sleep deprived. And, you know, I think a lot of it, we can really start to say, you know, let's talk about what you might be afraid of here and have them have emotions, words to go with it, would be really powerful. Sleep and deprivation.
Critical thinking level too, right? Like what's actually going on? And I think the earlier you can teach that, the better, but we can talk about thinking next time.
Yeah. You know, we've already talked about sleep, but I will say that sleep deprivation is a huge deal. And what I notice now is working moms, you know, if you read this book, you're going to say like, wow, I need to be home cooking. I need to be telling me, reading to them at bedtime and doing my word of the day and doing my, you know, it's like, there's a bit of like, I'm never going to be enough for this. And that's a little bit of an issue. We talked about some of that in this chapter, but when you show up, if you're a working mom and you show up and you're trying to put a healthy meal on the table and kids need help on homework and you feel guilty that you haven't spent any time with them and you want to read them a book and you want to give them a back rub, and now they're going to bed 2 hours late or an hour and a half late and they wake up sleep deprived the next day, trust that their emotion reactions will not be okay. Mm-hmm. They will not have the same fortitude. They won't have the same equipment to be able to deal with stresses that come their way. Sleep is super important for that. We know that because we've suffered sleep deprivation before. We know we're short, we're snippy, we're short with people, right?
Yeah. Now we have the same discussion every time like an event comes up for kids that we want to take them to, and you know, their bedtime right now is about 7:30 when we start everything. And a lot of these events, Friday nights, right? They don't get started until 7:00. So, you know, you're probably not getting home until 9:30. And it is that debate. Is this worth it? Because we know how they're going to be in an hour. We know how they're going to be the following day. And you have to know what's coming. You can't expect them to go and have a great time and have no meltdowns if you're keeping them up past their bedtime. And then the same thing.
And they don't have a homework assignment to hand in. I know, it's really tough, isn't it?
Yeah, because you want to have great experiences and have fun, but you do have to know that what that does, like you said, the same thing it does is with us as adults. So we can't.
I have to say, I might have mentioned this to you before, so you and I have had a long friendship now, but did you ever see the movie Captain Fantastic?
No.
It's Hunter's favorite. It's cute. I saw it on a Delta flight and I talked to him about it, and he saw it and he was like, oh my gosh. It's about a guy who raises his kids in the wilderness and then needs to come in into the fold for a significant funeral. And the kids encounter their cousins. And it's really amazing when you think about it, how we think living in this society with all the convenience of this and public schools, and I'm no indictment on public schools because I'm a big fan of teachers, but I mean, it's incredible how much we can learn by being in and on the land. And I'm kind of going back to that, but you should see the movie. It's fascinating.
You got me hooked, but then I also find it interesting with Hunter being a wilderness man that of course it's his favorite.
I know.
Funny how that plays a part. So one thing I want to make sure we hit on before we wrap this up too is that you talk about healing apologies in the book. So can you talk a little bit about that here? Because I think they're really important.
Yeah, I think that the words "I'm sorry" are two really powerful words. And they also evoke some forgiveness. There's a sense that we humble ourselves enough to apologize. And I'm not talking about apologies that are lost, like, I'm sorry for everything I even said or everything that made you mad. That doesn't really own it, right? That's like, I'm sorry you're mad. Like, I've thought about this and I'm really sorry I overreacted. I wish I hadn't said this. I know I can't take it back. I'm really sorry that I didn't show up when I said I would. I got really distracted and I have, you know, I have nothing but remorse for that. I'm so sorry. Like a really sincere, I own it. And not, I'm sorry, but mm-hmm. The word but negates everything you're going to say, the whole apology.
Yeah.
We should try not to say words like always and never, but we should truly try to switch the word but to and. I'm sorry, and if you want to add something else on it, I'd like to ask of you, not I'm sorry but you did, I'm sorry and next time I'd like for you and I to figure out how we can do this better. Like and does not negate the apology. So again, impeccable with our words. I think they go a long way toward healing. They show our vulnerability. They teach kids humility. And we as parents make a lot of mistakes, and we often try to cover it because we're large and in charge, right? Mm-hmm. And it is not setting them up to make good apologies to their friends. You know,
yeah.
You want them, they're going to make mistakes too. And you want them not like, you know, there was a while there where people were like, I'm sorry, should be eliminated. Like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. That's just a sign of poor self-esteem. Like, I don't know. I don't see it the same.
It's different. I mean, it's different when it's actually taking responsibility over something like that, especially when you're setting an example for your kids. Like, I found myself saying, I'm sorry, the other day when I was doing boxing drills with my personal trainer and I hit the wrong glove. And then I was like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And then I'm like, wait, why am I saying I'm sorry? Like, it's fine. I'm sorry in those cases need to be eliminated.
Yeah, I get that. And there's a difference.
There is.
You know, speaking of hitting, you know, this is triggered in my mind is that if you're hitting your child because you lose your temper and you apologize and you do it again and you apologize, this is what creates abusive behavior that escalates, and it teaches kids to accept abuse. And you need to get some help for that. And that's a personal issue for you that you're not able to manage your emotions and it comes out as physical. You need to get some help for that, so that if you catch yourself apologizing to your child because you've been violent and you don't go get help for that rage and that expression of that, that becomes a problem, I think. I don't know. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, it's one of those that it's, you know, I come from parents, right? Who, or my dad specifically, who it was always the belt, right? When we got in trouble. So it's hard to shake that too. And you just wonder what that did to you as a child and long-term. It's one of those that for me, it's always that struggle still with what's right and what's not, and the level of what's right and what's not. But I think anytime, especially as an adult, and if you have any sort of emotional intelligence, emotional awareness of your own emotions, you can honestly step back in those moments and ask yourself, was I doing this because I really felt like my child was not listening? There was no other sort of discipline that was working. This was the only thing the child was listening to. Or was there some part of you doing it because it was tied into rage or tied into something else that was more of a outlet for you? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there is you have to be able to know that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. That's a slippery slope because we tend to see families, that have been raised heavy handed or abusive, carrying that forward.
Yeah.
And probably you didn't carry the belt thing forward because
the belt terrifies.
So that's a little different because the belt is, you know, well thought out. You're going to sit for this punishment. Mm-hmm. If not the knee jerk, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is a style of parenting you don't agree with. Mm-hmm. So it's not hard to step out of that kind of legacy. The hard part is to step out of the legacy where you're doing things and then completely recognizing that you lost it. Anyway, we're kind of running down a rabbit
hole. I love that though, right? And I think that control aspect is a big piece too.
Yeah.
If you were out of control in that moment, that's another like trigger that should be very.
I also think we render these harsh judgments on our kids when they don't behave or act like we want them to. And we're really trying to create little carbon copies. Let's face it, they're good at mimicking when they're toddlers, and when they start to differentiate themselves and become a person, we don't like it.
Yeah.
You know, like we want them to be like us. And these little corrections, and I owned it in the book. I said, I wanted my son to be very amiable and kind to people because kindness is super important to me. I want him to be always nice to strangers. I literally, when we walked out of every grocery store, I'd say, what'd you say, Hunter? He'd be like, thank you for helping us. And then one day he goes, why am I the only one in the world that has to say thank you so much for helping us? I'm like, I do it. And he's like, I know, but you're weird. So the point is, I wanted him to do what I do. And instead of recognizing some of his strengths, which are different from that, right?
Sure.
And I think there are other ways for me to teach him the values that I have, like kindness being my number one value, than to have him mimic my words, right?
Exactly. To
say, you know, how could you be kind to animals today? How could you be kind to your friends today? How could you be show, what acts of kindness did you show? And have him express his own way of doing it rather than, you know, teaching him exactly what I wanted him to say, right?
Well, I think setting that example, like you're saying, is the best way to do it. Even the times that, I mean, I've had those moments where I've been like, now say this, every time we do this, they say totally. It, I don't think anything about it, right? Except good job. The times that I'm setting the example and then they go and do it on their own, those are the moments that stick out to me because I'm like, that's incredible. Like they are truly seeing what I'm doing and they're being kind in that way too. That always means more anyway. And that's truly that proof that they've adopted it as part of who they are then at that point versus.
Yeah, they're so much more genuine too. Yes. When they're saying it. It's like coming from them, not like, what do you say? Thank you for helping me. Really? Is that really?
Totally agree. And I think even as parents, sometimes we tend to, because we think we're encouraging our kids to say something like that. So like take the grocery we're checking out and we'll be like, okay, tell them thank you. But we don't say it. Instead, we're telling the kid to say, tell them thank you instead of us doing it. And like you said, setting sure. that in the first place. So that's something else to watch out for, you know.
I think we're out of time. We're past time. Such a good topic. I know. One of the things I just really wanted to mention was this whole bit about anxiety, which has doubled in COVID and is not going away. And when our culture got a lot more anxious about a lot of things, politically, environmentally, the COVID pandemic, all that, schools shutting down, people being cooped up at home, parents trying to work and parent at the same time, a lot of anxiety about money. There was this general elevation of anxiety and it really shows up in kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting back to basics at this point while we recover from a pandemic, again, getting kids outside, taking a breath, playing, getting down and just doing what they want to do and letting them, many of our kids aren't sleeping well at night because of anxiety. Maybe build a little worry box, let them decorate it and have them literally put down one word or a picture or a symbol that really references their worry and put it in the box and put it outside of their bedroom at a different time of day and being able to sit down and just say, we're going to put our worries there and we're going to, you know, if you're faith-filled, you can say we're going to give them to God or we're going to let them work out on their own. We know that things, that it won't always be this way, that these things have a way of working out and we can let them go for now where we can get good sleep and, you know, have some fun, play a game, do some things and let it go. So teaching your kids to manage their anxiety a little bit is helpful.
It's a great idea. I love that.
Anyway, we could talk for hours on this. We're hoping to get so much done today. We got half a chapter. We'll talk about cognitive health next time. What does it take for your child to really learn well? So many of us want our kids to do well in school. And there's some really cool things in the literature that have come out about that. And I'd like to talk about those a little bit more next time.
Can't wait.
We'll try to keep it shorter.
No promises. No. Thank you all for joining. Of course, if you're watching on Instagram or Facebook, please be sure to leave a comment and ask any question that you would like with Dr. Susan Maples, and we will see you next time.
Great. Thanks, Lauren. It was really fun. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Brave Parent podcast with your host, Dr. Susan Maples, author of Brave Parent, and Lauren Eckert, founder of Burning Soul Press. Be sure to leave a podcast review and grab your copy of Brave Parent on Amazon or Audible or wherever you choose to buy your books. Bye for now.